You are listening to The Writer's Voice on The Virginia Voice. And for The Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. The Henrico County Public Library, in partnership with Henrico County Public Schools and the Friends of Henrico County Public Library, is hosting award-winning author Lee Smith and her novel, Guests on Earth, as part of its annual All Henrico Reads program. Lee Smith is a Virginian. She was born in Grundy and attended St. Catherine's School here in Richmond, and later Hollins College. She's the recipient of the 1999 Academy Award in Literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, the North Carolina Award for Literature, and a Southern Book Critics Circle Award. Lee Smith is the author of some 16 works of fiction, the latest being Guests on Earth. Lee Smith joins us to tell you a bit about Guests on Earth. Lee, welcome.
Thank you so much. I am delighted to be with you.
Lee, you might start by telling us about the title, Guests on Earth. You start at the very beginning of your book with a quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald, which explains this, but explain it to us.
Okay, well, the title, Guests on Earth, actually comes from a quote by F. Scott Fitzgerald, the novelist, in a letter that he wrote to his daughter, Scotty, in 1940 about her mother, and her mother being, of course, the famous and infamous Zelda Fitzgerald. And I think most people don't realize that Zelda actually spent the last 13 years of her life in a mental hospital in the mountains in Asheville, North Carolina, a very famous hospital at the time named Highland Mental Hospital. But anyway, Scott was writing a note, a letter to his daughter Scotty, talking about her mom, and he said, quote, "The insane are always mere guests on earth, eternal strangers carrying around broken decalogues that they cannot read." So on the face of this is very sad. I mean, a decalogue is a stone tablet with inscriptions on it, kind of like the Ten Commandments. But I think we're all guests on earth in a way. Here we are, you know, just for a small time. And I think most of us are a little bit crazy too, one way or another. And so I want my readers here to read this book about Zelda Fitzgerald and her time in that hospital and all the people that were there then. And as I kind of use the novel form as a way to examine this very thin line between sanity and insanity. And what I really wanted to do is show that very real lives are lived within these illnesses and within these such institutions that, you know, friendships, love affairs, learning, growth, healing, and all kinds of transformations occur. So this is a novel long in the making, long in the research, and very, very dear to my heart. And I tell you, it's not nearly as dire as it might sound because there's some mighty lively characters in these pages, too.
Well, you had some personal connection with the hospital, the Highland
Hospital.
Absolutely,
absolutely. In the 50s, my father, who suffered from depression, was a patient there, and I remember visiting. And the hospital itself was more like, it almost looked like a resort. The buildings are still there on top of one of the mountains in Asheville. And, you know, there are various kinds of really interesting buildings. It sort of looks like a resort or maybe a college campus up there. And I remember going to a tea dance with Daddy and dancing with Daddy at the hospital tea dance, and my mom, because this hospital was very unique, specializing in theater and dancing and musical events and all kinds of things which were not really going on at other hospitals at the time. So it was a very interesting place. And it was on top of one mountain and that bowl of mountains surrounding Asheville. And the Grove Park Inn was on the next mountain over the famous hotel, which is where F. Scott Fitzgerald always stayed when he came to visit Zelda. And so this is a picturesque kind of a novel too.
Well, your son Josh was also there for a while.
Yes, and that was when I really, really got interested in, and I can tell you the moment I knew I was going to write this book. My son Josh was schizophrenic. He actually died 10 years ago from a heart attack, but in the late 80s, in 1990, 1991, he spent three really helpful years up at Highlands Mental Hospital, where he was sometimes inpatient and sometimes in one of the halfway houses, during which he was playing jazz in various places in downtown Asheville, took a course or two from UNC Asheville, and in general had some very helpful years there. And so the moment I knew that I was going to write this book has to do with Josh and me walking up the mountain toward the Mountaintop Hospital in 1991 and seeing the sunset as outlined by all the buildings that comprise the hospital on top of that mountain. And one of them looked like a castle and still does. It's named Homewood, and it's got, you know, turrets and battlements and so on, and it just looked like a castle there against the brilliant red sky. And but the red sky behind it there reminded me of something very tragic, which was that Zelda and eight other women had died there at the hospital in one of the worst hospital fires that ever occurred, because they were on the top floor in a locked ward. They had just taken insulin shock treatments that day. And so seeing the red sky behind that building made me think about Zelda's death, which was finally a mystery. It was set, but nobody knew why. And I was just so shocked by this image and taken by it. And coincidentally, I had also been reading a whole bunch of Zelda and Scott's love letters to each other, written when they were young. And in one of them, he complains to her because she keeps going out with other boys in Montgomery, where she lived, when he was up in New York trying to make enough money so they could get married. And he wished she would not go out with anybody but him, of course. And so he wrote to her and he said, "Now I know why they keep princesses in towers," wishing he could keep her all to himself. And she wrote back. She was always very, you know, very feisty. She wrote back and said, "Well, it's nice that you keep in such close touch with me, Scott, but you've said the same thing in your last six letters." And so all of this came together at one moment in my mind, and I thought about the image of the imprisoned Southern princess in the tower, because Zelda was imprisoned by so many things, by her illness, by, you know, many, many things, and by her illness and the treatments of her illness and her marriage and all kinds of things. And suddenly it all came together for me, and I thought, I'm going to write a book, a novel about this fire and all the people that were there then. And I have known ever since 1991 that I was going to write this book. And I can't even tell you actually how much research I've done over these years before it actually has come out.
You're hearing from Lee Smith, the author of Guests on Earth. And Lee, most fiction books, have a disclaimer that all characters are fictional and any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. And yet in your book, you weave them together.
I do weave them together, and it's the first time really that I've done this to such an extent. I do use Scott and Zelda as characters in my novel, and I feel like since I'm doing this that my great obligation was to present them as truly and accurately as I possibly can at that point in their lives, the years that the book covers, from 1936 to 1948, Zelda's death in the horrific fire. Scott had died in 1940, but I present them as accurately as I possibly can as characters in my novel. And also I have as characters in my novel Dr. Robert Carroll, who did run and invent Highland Mental Hospital and all his very innovative treatments that he had for people and activities that went on there. And his wife, Grace Potter Carroll, who was a famous concert pianist, sort of the toast of Europe before she came to Asheville and continued with her concerts and piano lessons and all kinds of things there while at the hospital. And a few other people, real people, made cameos. One of Mrs. Carroll's proteges was the little girl in Asheville named Eunice Waymans, who became Nina Simone. And so that's really true. She took voice and piano lessons from Mrs. Carroll when she was a child. And others that I found, you know, in my sort of research, prototypical patients being treated for, you know, for things that were the most difficult reasons why people had been sent there to that hospital. And so there's a lot of fact, and I just weave it all together. What I do is attempt a solution to the mystery of the fire using my characters, both fictionalized and totally imaginary. And it's a large cast of characters because during my research, people just kept leaping from the pages of things I was reading and saying, okay, I want to be a character in this book too. So I have some very interesting made-up characters in addition to the real characters I just mentioned.
In your book, Guests on Earth, each of these characters has his or her own story.
That's right, because you know what? I'm really an activist in terms of mental illness and trying to, you know, remove the stigma that has attached to this. Of course, I'm an activist because of my whole, you know, my family's involvement here for so many years. But I don't like for people to be defined by their illnesses, and each person does have a story and a real life lived within the illness. So we have the backstories too on a number of my favorite characters. One of them, for instance, is Dixie, and I think I keep hearing from people who say that Dixie is their main favorite, and she was actually typical of the time, because during these years, this is the 40s, 30s and 40s, many women, frankly, especially from the Deep South, would just be shipped off for a few, quote, helpful shock treatments and a kind of re-education if they just didn't fit into the role that society and their class and their marriage decreed. I mean, it was very hard to be an original and creative woman in those days. You were supposed to, you know, really fit into certain molds. And so there were many such women at just exactly like Dixie who were, you know, having a few shock treatments to calm them down. And Dr. Carroll even wrote a book about the reeducation of women to their feminine and, you know, maternal roles. So while he was very inventive in the treatments that he offered and his approaches to mental illness, he still took a very traditional view of women and women's possibilities at creativity.
Not only that, but you spoke a few moments ago about this very thin line between sanity and who's crazy and who is not.
Yeah.
And in your book, no one is totally crazy, and that's a terrible term to use, I guess.
But it's fine. Let's just embrace it and talk about it, is my thought.
But they have moments that they are as normal as your best friend, and then times when they're a little eccentric.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And because, you know, most of these illnesses are not static. They're not static conditions. I mean, at certain times, particularly, you know, bipolar, I mean, you know, your behavior and your, you know, your ability to be rational varies wildly from time to time during the phase of the illness. And this is true. Well, this is true with schizophrenia. I mean, this is just true. So you see this at work, and you also, I think, one thing I wanted to explore was the link between art and madness, between creativity and madness, because, you know, any artist, in order to be an artist, thinks a little bit outside the box and has a certain originality too. And so I think, you know, a novel is a chance to look at things. It's like holding a prism up in a ray of sunlight and turning it this way and that. And I think a novel is a way of looking at certain issues and ideas from all different kinds of directions. And so I took my opportunity at this because I've been very interested in the way mental illness is perceived over the decades, how it was treated then, how it was thought of, etc. And so this was my chance to examine a lot of different ideas.
To rephrase it a bit, it sounds like you're saying there's a very thin line between genius and insanity.
You got it. You have totally got it. And also, you know, you have to remember that this was actually a kind of scary time because we did not have the antipsychotic medications, you know, that we have now. And so there were all sorts of cures going on in addition to insulin shock, which was really scary. And people did die during insulin shock where they basically gave you a shot and threw you into a diabetic coma. And, you know, then you would, which you would be in for numerous hours, and then they would give you sugar, you know, et cetera, to bring you back. And people, you know, bruised themselves, hurt themselves, thrashed around. A lot of damage was done during these things. And when I was on my book tour with this book, two different people came up and told me that actually both of them, their mothers, the two different mothers, had died during insulin shock treatment at Highland Hospital. But yet, this was the cutting-edge treatment, and it was the best, one of the best hospitals in the country at that time. But they were also, they did the rest cure, which sounds kind of good to me, where they sort of wrap you up and kind of tranquilize you and swaddle you, basically, and you sleep for about a week. I think that sounds pretty good. But then the freeze wrap, where they bring your temperature way, way down, which to me, again, sounds scary. After insulin shock would come electroshock, which could be controlled, where you know, where it could be controlled a little bit better. But this was also the time of my, you know, the time of my book here, 1936 to 1948, was the time of eugenics. There were forced sterilizations of girls and women that had been declared promiscuous or had had relations with people of the wrong race. This was going on all over the South, and I have one of my major characters, Jinx, is a brilliant poor girl who has gotten on the wrong side of the tracks on the law, and she's been sterilized against her will, and she ends up at the hospital too. And this was also the age of lobotomy. In fact, in 1948, as late as 1948, the Nobel Prize was given to the person, to the physician who invented lobotomy. So it doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but a lot of the methods being used were, you know, and they were not doing lobotomies at Highland Hospital, but they were treating people who had had, for instance, botched lobotomies or whatever. So there's such a character as that in my book. So there's a lot going on here during the time, and in terms of Dr. Freeman, he was very interesting because he had invented treatments that, you know, he thought that you shouldn't, to use that word again, you shouldn't just sit around being crazy. You should do something. And so he had everybody who possibly could walking 5 miles a day. He had them doing, all the work on the hospital grounds, gardening as therapy, participation in theatricals, musicals, and he really kind of invented occupational therapy, what we call occupational therapy, such as woodworking and art therapy. Zelda herself was a major visual artist as well as a writer, which we already knew, and a ballet dancer. And he had all kinds of interactions with the townspeople, such as dances and social events, to sort of recondition his patients to go back into real life. So it was an interesting place and an interesting time.
Very interesting, which you have chronicled in the book, Guests on Earth. Each of the characters, and there are many, many characters, as I said before, has their own story, and people will find it fascinating in this All Henrico Reads book, Guests on Earth. Lee Smith is the author. Lee, tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that we were talking before the interview started that you were born in Grundy in Southwest Virginia, kind of a dot on the map.
Yeah, well, it's a dot on the map, but it's just about the most interesting place I think one could possibly be born, Grundy, Virginia. It was very small when I was born there in 1944, a coal town, coal mining town, and my dad ran the dime store there in town, but he was not in the mines, and most of his family was not either. They were store owners, and my granddaddy was the county treasurer, my Uncle Vern was a state, in the state legislature, etc. And my mother, though, was an outsider. She had come there to marry Daddy. She met him at somebody else's wedding, and she came there. She eloped with him and came to Grundy, and she was a home economics teacher for many years, at first the Presbyterian school and then the high school. So in some ways, I think maybe Mama being an outsider made me a writer to a degree, because she was fascinated, and she always sort of saw the story. She would remark on things that everybody else took for granted, and she was very funny and very smart. And plus, all the people in my dad's family were all in politics. They were all Yellow Dog Democrats, and they were all fabulous storytellers. So I just grew up on stories, and the stories I heard in Grundy remain the best, I think, I will ever tell, and or ever, you know, ever hear or ever have had a chance to tell.
At what age did you start telling stories?
Well, it was real funny. I was an only child, coming to my parents late in life when they thought they would never have any child at all. And so I think I was spoiled, and I was so interested in reading. And they just got me all kinds of books to read. We went to the library constantly once we got a library, as well as, you know, listen to the oral storytelling. And at a certain point, I loved my little books so much, I started writing more onto the end of the books, because I couldn't stand for them to end. So I would write more chapters onto the Bobbsey twins, for instance, and I would insert myself into the plot, like the Bobbsey twins became the Bobbsey triplets, or I would insert myself into Nancy Drew, so that Nancy's best friends were not only George Fain and Bess Marvin, but little Lee Smith. So early on, I was really living in books, I would have to say.
In Guests on Earth, you fictionalize some real people, and I understand you in your early books, you fictionalized, or stories, fictionalized Adlai Stevenson and Jane Russell. And
Well, this was my first little book I ever wrote, and I wrote it on my mother's stationery. I think I was 9, and the two main characters were two people who I was very interested in at the time. One was Adlai Stevenson, because we were all Democrats, as I said, and he was running or had just run, I can't remember, for president, and we were all for him. So Adlai Stevenson was the hero of this little book. And the other one was somebody I saw all the time on the movie screen in Grundy, because we had Westerns all the time, and the movie just changed once every week. And Jane Russell was often the lead. And so in my little book, Adlai Stevenson and Jane Russell fall in love, and they run off together in a covered wagon, because I was singing a lot of Westerns. And they go west, and once there, they get married and then become somewhat inexplicably Mormons, because I think some Mormons had come to our door, and I was fascinated with Mormons. So anyhow, we were in Grundy, you know, we were fascinated with anybody that was from anywhere else, because that ring of mountains really closed us in, and we had bad roads then, and it was a remote and very close community and a very different kind of place to grow up.
Well, Lee Smith, you are a child of the South, and you write about the South in many of your books. You have a collection of books here, Fair and Tender, Ladies, Saving Grace, The Last Girls. You write about the South very much, and Southern women.
Yes. I mean, I think one of the most important things, it's advice that's ever been given about writing, is write what you know. I mean, you do have to understand your material and be able to see your characters and the place where they exist in your mind's eye, clearly. And for me, I've really never been anywhere much except the South. And so that's what I write about, and I write most about Southern women, again, because I'm a woman, and I'm very proud of this new book. But I guess it was a real breakthrough for me many years ago when I was first able to write my whole bunch of Appalachian books that really are set in Buchanan County there, in and around Grundy, and that chronicle the lives of early mountain women, many of them based upon the older ladies in my own family and women that I knew growing up. And these were often hard lives, and people that, you know, had too little education and too many children, but you know, they kept on keeping on, as my mother used to say. It's just very, very thrilled to get to honor these lives in some of those early books, like Oral History, Fair and Tender Ladies, and The Music and The Devil's Dream, and so on. And then other books like The Last Girls, that starts at Hollins College, where I went to school, and it's about the lives of more contemporary Southern women. So I have kind of, you know, been all over the place on this, and it does remain, I think, an important theme for me.
Lee Smith's latest novel, Guests on Earth, is part of the annual All Henrico Reads program, and Lee Smith joins us on The Writer's Voice. Lee, it has been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you so much, and I am just very honored to be on this program, and I hope you will enjoy the book.
You're listening to The Writer's Voice on The Virginia Voice, and for The Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.